Now we're holding on page 88 in Bhavabhastra, three lines from the bottom, middle of Oisabhav. We started learning yesterday a story that one time during a period of famine, Rebbe opened up his storehouses to offer food, but only to those, he said, to those who've learned some part of Torah, Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, etc., but not Amei Oretz. But then we said Yonasan ben Amram, who was actually a Talmud Chacham, presented him, pretended as though he was an Am Aretz and came and asked for food anyway. And when Rebbe felt bad afterwards that he had given him, then his son Reb Shimon tells him, you know, this was actually Yonasan ben Amram, your Talmud, and he doesn't want to have any Hanoah from the Torah. So then Rebbe announced, everybody can come in, we're not going to discriminate anymore. So Rebbe, the question is then why in the first place did Rebbe not want to give to the Amei Oretz? So we talked about yesterday a couple of reasons Marsha brings, because the Amei Oretz don't know to make themselves afflicted and suffer together with everybody else when there's a time of trouble. They just figure they can live it up because whatever he gives to the Amei Oretz is going to be deprived from the Chachamim. But the Gemara makes another point as well. Rebbe the Taimei, Rebbe is going according to his Svara, the Omer Rebbe, in Pur'onus, Bo'ol Olam, Ela B'Shvil Amei Oretz. To begin with, punishment comes to the world only because of Amei Oretz. So therefore, like they're the ones at fault, why should they be the ones to benefit from Rebbe's largesse? As we have the following example, Kiahu Dmei Klila. For example, there was a case involving the money for a crown. So Rashi explains that it means a crown for the emperor, for the Roman emperor. So Bapashtos, then it would mean, in other words, like they're raising money to make a new crown for the emperor. Eitz Yosef brings from the Aruch another point that the king's crown had been stolen, and it was also Deshadu at Tveria. They imposed the tax for this crown on Tveria. So the simple meaning, in other words, would be that the people of Tveria are being obligated to pay to the expenses of making a new crown for the new crown or tiara or whatever for the emperor, or repairing the old one or whatever. Eitz Yosef brings from the Aruch. What happened was the crown had been stolen, and the crown had been kept in Tveria, and it was stolen. So the emperor blames the people of Tveria for the theft, and therefore he's going to make them all pay. Also the Kamei de Rebbe, so they came to Rebbe, the Amei Oretz of Tveria came to Rebbe, the Omrulei, and they said, Leisvu Rabbanan Bahadon, the Chachamim of Tveria should contribute together with us to help pay for this expense. Omrulei, so Rebbe tells them, no, the Talmud Chachamim are not to be taxed, as we learned yesterday. Omrulei, so the Amei Oretz said, Ari Kinon, then we'll run away. And then there'll be no choice but for the Talmud Chachamim to pay the tax, because we won't be around. Omulahu, so he says, then fine, Aroiku, go ahead and run away, I'm not worried about it. Orik Palga, half the Amei Oretz of Tveria ran away. Dal Yuha Lepalga, so the emperor forgave half of the Dalyuah, literally means lifted up, half of the expense. So if before they had been assessed, let's say, $1 million, now they're being assessed only 500,000. That's how Rashi explains. Marsha brings from the Mordechai, who in turn brings from Rabbeinu Tam, who wonders, wait a minute, we're saying, as the Amei Oretz ran away, then the emperor is willing to forgive part of the tax. But eventually we're going to have, the Gemara is going to go and say, you know what, let's look at the rest of the story, then we'll talk about what Marsha and the other Mephoshim say on it. So, okay, so Orek Palga, half of them ran away. Dalyul the Palga, they withdrew, and the emperor is now not going to charge them for half of the amount that he was before. Also, Hanu Palga Kamei de Rebbe, the remaining half, the other Amei Oretz, came back to Rebbe. Omrulei, they said, Leis v'Rabban al-Bahadon. Again, let the Chachamim of Tveria contribute with us towards this fund. Omrulei, and again, Rebbe says to them, no. Omrulei, so this other half also said, Ari Kinon, we're going to run away. Omrulehu Areiku, so he says, fine, goes on to hate, run away. Oru Kulhoin, all of them ended up running away, all the Amei Oretz. Poshahu Kovis, all that was left was a certain laundryman. A man who did people's laundry for a living. Shadyua Akovis, so then they imposed the entire tax on this one laundryman. Orak Koivis, the laundryman, also ran away from Tveria. Poka Klila, and the whole thing went bust, and they forgave the whole thing, and the emperor is not going to charge them the money at all. Omer Rebbe. So Rebbe says Re'isem. So you see from the story, Shein Peronis Bala Olam Ala B'Shvil Amir Oretz. You see that punishment comes to the world only because of the Amir Oretz. And as soon as the Amir Oretz are gone from Tveria, then even the Romans are not going to charge us taxes for this crown or for making a new crown or replacing the stolen one or whatever. Now, so here's where Marsha points out that the Rabbi Natam asks, and the Mordechai brings it, that wait a minute, if we're saying at the end of the story that they imposed the entire tax on the laundryman, and the pashtus, he was an Amar Oretz as well. So that means, in other words, so why in the first place would they, so in other words, they have nothing against imposing the tax on the Amar Oretz, apparently. So why would we have when everybody ran away, why would we not say that he also would have been forgiven that he also would have been exempted from his portion of the tax or something like that? So therefore they explained the other way around. Galua Apalga, what happened was then they said, fine, the remaining Amir Oretz in town have to pay that tax. In other words, the gifts that we have in front of us, and the way Rashi explains it, is when half the Amir Oretz ran away, then they took off half the tax they were gonna charge. But the Mordechai, Rabbi Natam, and the Mordechai learned the other way around. It means they were still going to charge the whole amount, but instead of charging it to all, now we can't charge it to all the Amir Oretz because half of them are gone. Instead, that same $1 million, let's say, is now going to be the remaining Amir Oretz are going to have to all defray it, which means each of them is going to have to pay twice as much as he did before. Then when we're saying, when all of them ran away, then they were going to say the Kovas himself is going to have to pay the $1 million. And when he ran away, then they said, fine, there's nobody else to charge it to, and they just the whole thing went bust. However, that's the question that we showed him ask. Marshall explains that no, what we can say is yeah, that they were going to impose the tax on everybody. Rebbe explained that Rebbe probably told the government or whatever, or Rebbe himself arranged that the Talmid Chachamim will be potter, that Amir Oretz will pay on behalf of the Talmid Chachamim. Because again, Rebbe holds, as we're saying, that the Poronos came to begin with only because of the Amir Oretz. And because the Talmid Chacham are not really townspeople anyway, because they always travel from place to place. So then, in that case, so Rebbe is saying, you can't charge the Talmid Chachamim for one thing, because they're not residents of the city, really. They live here temporarily, they live elsewhere, they come here only to learn Torah. So the Amir Oretz then said, in that case, then we won't be townspeople anymore. We'll run away. Well, the government starts asking, how come half the people of Tveria ran away? And the answer is, that they don't want to pay on behalf of the Talmid Chachamim. They feel it's enough that they should pay for themselves, they shouldn't have to pay on behalf of the Talmid Chachamim as well. Well, the emperor says, fine, in that case then, they have the Talmid Chachamim, Rebbe and the Talmid Chachamim have a valid point. They shouldn't be charged tax at all. Fine, we'll remit them half the amount. So now they only have to pay on behalf of themselves, the Amir Oretz. The part that would have been from the Talmid Chachamim, which the Amir Oretz are expected to give on their behalf, we'll take that away. In fact, Maushal says, when we learned yesterday, a posik in Hosea, gam ki yisnu magoim after akabzeim, and that whole posik, it's meant not only to tell us Jewish people, it's actually meant as an instruction for the Goyish kings as well. So this king, it may well have been Antoninus, who was the friend of Rebbe, recognized that, and therefore, so he's going to remit the part that the Chachamim should have had to give. So now, the other half of the Amir Oretz say, that look, you know, at least the Talmid Chachamim should contribute the other half because we're losing out because of the Talmid Chachamim. And again, Rebbe tells them no, so they all ran away. So now what it means is, in other words, fine, he's still not going to forgive the part that the Amir Oretz should have had to pay for themselves. That part, that half of the original $1 million, let's say, would have been on the Kovas until he ran away, and then there's nothing left. Then there's nobody left to charge because even the emperor recognized that you don't charge this kind of tax to Talmid Chachamim.
It should have been on the way.
So you don't charge this kind of tax on Talmid Chachamim, and therefore there's nobody left. There's no Amir Oretz left. So Rebbe says, you see, in the first place, the whole punishment came because of the Amir Oretz. Had everybody been Talmid Chachamim, then the emperor would have realized in the first place that you don't charge taxes for imperial crowns to the Talmid Chachamim, and therefore the whole thing wouldn't have started.
How did this crown get damaged?
We don't know. The Rashi just says that it was for a crown. So from Rashi, from Rashi's Lashon, you could understand that it means that a new crown needed to be made for whatever reason, and they were going to charge the people to vary a tax. According to the Aruch,
damaged it, you know.
According to the Aruch, the Vork is, the crown was being kept in Tveria and then was stolen, and so the people in Tveria were blamed for it. According to the other possibility, not necessarily, just Tveria was a major city in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, yeah.
And they're the charge.
Yeah. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about like this. Now we said, we learned yesterday, and that brought us into this whole discussion of Talmid Chachamim, that when it comes to the defenses of the city, the Talmid Chachamim are not to be charged for it, because as we said, the Torah protects them. On the other hand, the Gemara points out, what if you have Yisoimim in the city? Now, if you have Yisoimim, you have orphans. Now, the local Beisdin is called Avim Shom Yisoimim. They're considered the father of the Yisoimim, and they're responsible for managing the Yisoimim's money responsibly. Normally, they appoint an apotropos, a caretaker, who manages the money until the Yisoimim are old enough to handle it themselves. Whatever the case, they have to be always very careful. We have many dinim throughout Shas where we have to be super careful with their money, that none of it should be wasted and none of it should be used on speculative things and things like that. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, when it comes to paying for the city defenses, the Yisoimim, the estate that the Yisoimim inherited, also has to pay their fair share, because after all, they need protection just as much as anybody else. However, then the Gemara goes on to say, for example, if it's a matter of digging a new well for the city, then not necessarily, because not every time you dig a well is it going to come out water. Sometimes you may dig a dry hole, and why should the Yisoimim have to contribute to something speculative like that where their money may be wasted? So that leads the Gemara into a discussion of what kinds of things we do charge to Yisoimim and whatnot, and one of them being that we don't assess them for tzedakah most of the time. There's certain exceptions the Gemara mentions, but in general we don't assess Yisoimim towards the city's tzedakah fund. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion of tzedakah and pidyon shvuyim and other related things. So the Gemara starts off. Ifra Hurmiz, that was her name, she's mentioned in a number of places in Shas, the mother of Shabur Malka. Shabur Malka, we've learned before, was the king of Persia. There were two or three kings of that name in Persian history. So Ifra Hurmiz was the name of the mother of King Shabur. In general history, we find that one of these Shabars was crowned as a baby, so until he was old enough, then his mother helped run the kingdom on his behalf. She's mentioned in a number of places in Shas. She was friendly with Chachamim. Here we see that she sent tzedakah to Rabbi Yosef. We find different things. There's even one place where Rashi says that she was kroiv aladas Yisrael. She's close to the Jewish religion. Like, for example, it mentions in the Gemara in Nida that she kept the dinim of Nidus, even though she's a goita and is not required to. There's also a few days ago in Daf HaYomi, there was in Zvachim, which we just finished in Masechta Zvachim today, but a few days ago there was a Gemara where one time she sends an animal for a korban to Rava. She wants a korban brought on her behalf to Hashem. This is long after the korban, and it's in Bavel. You can't bring korbanos over there, but Rava told his Talmidim to get two goyish boys and instruct them how they will bring the korban L'Shem Shemayim, because the fact is, a goy can do that. Even nowadays, a goy can bring a korban to Hashem wherever he wants, subject only to certain rules.
What was this queen's name?
Ifra Hurmiz. So now, there are other places, there's a few places where Rashi and Tosfos discuss the meaning of the name. Tosfos discusses it over here, Rashi discusses it in some places. We learned at the end of Bav Metzia, we had the expression, the very last words were from Shabur Malka, her son, or a different Shabur Malka, as the case may be. He said, "Apiryan namtiyeh l'Rav Shimon." There should be grace given to Rav Shimon for the halacha that he had said. So we see that the word apiryan and ifra, which is closely related, means grace. Hurmiz, Rashi in some places explains that Hurmiz is the name of a shed. You find a shed by the name of Hurmiz mentioned in a few places in Shas. We're going to have later on in Or Masechta, we're going to have an example of it. So therefore, Ifra Hurmiz would mean a devilish or like a bewitching beauty and grace. Tosfos, on the other hand, brings over here that Hurmiz is actually the Persian name for Hashem. So therefore, it would mean a grace from Hashem. Whatever the case, that was her name. So Imed Shabur Malka, she's the mother of King Shabur, Shodra Aunika, the dinari kamed Rabbi Yosef. She one time sent a purse of gold dinarim to Rabbi Yosef. Omrelay, and she says with the purse, she says to Heved Dola Mitzvah Rabba, this money should be used for a great mitzvah. Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, for Kama'ayinba. So Rabbi Yosef was sitting and thinking into it and investigating mitzvah rabba ma'ayhavi. What is the great mitzvah that we should use this gift from her for? Now, it's not so simple, by the way, to accept tzedakah from goyim. The Gemara is later on in the sugya of tzedakah. The Gemara is going to discuss that point, that also later on, at one point, the same queen, Ifra Hurmiz, sent tzedakah to Rava, and when he accepted it, then some of the other Chachamim were upset at him for that. Here, we don't find Rabbi Yosef objecting to it, so we'll talk about So we'll talk about it in a little bit, and we'll talk more over there. That's the shame, what the difference is. Anyway, so she says it should be for a mitzvah rabba. So Rabbi Yosef has to figure out what is the mitzvah rabba. Omalei Abaya, So Abaya, who was Rabbi Yosef's Talmud, tells him, "Need the Tony of Shmuel by Yehuda." Since we have a brisa that Rabbi Shmuel by Yehuda had taught in the Gemara right before this, "Ein poskin tzedakah al yisem afilu l'pidyon shvuyim." We never assess yisomim, the estate that yisomim have inherited. We never assess them to contribute to tzedakah for the community, even for pidyon shvuyim. Shmamina, the fact that the Baraita has to say even for pidyon shvuyim means shmamina mitzvah rabba pidyon shvuyim. We can deduce from that that pidyon shvuyim is considered a great mitzvah, and the chiddush says even that we don't assess yisoyim and make their caretaker of the estate that they inherited pay out from that to tzedakah. So therefore, in other words, so you should use the money that if for whom is gave for pidyon shvuyim. One interesting point. So again, you know, there's the question. So there is the question. So under what circumstances are and aren't we allowed to accept tzedakah for goyim? So one point is, Tosfos makes the point later on that here where she specifically said it should be used for mitzvah rabba. So and since we've established that mitzvah rabba means pidyon shvuyim, the goyim know we don't do pidyon shvuyim to goyim. When we do pidyon shvuyim, it's the fellow Jews who've been captured. Therefore, there's really no way to evade it. Later on, when the Gemara tells that she sent money to Rava for tzedakah and he accepted it, and Rami was upset with Rava, and the Gemara explains Rava ended up using the money for tzedakah towards goyim, because after all, fine, there's nothing wrong with that. We do give tzedakah to goyim as well. But that's pidyon shvuyim is not the case. Therefore, so they couldn't get away with you saying when he used it for pidyon shvuyim of goyim, because that wouldn't work, and therefore Rabbi Yosef has no choice but to use it for pidyon shvuyim of Jews. Ben Yehoyada, actually in his Sefer Ben Yahu, says a very interesting idea about it. When should you not take tzedakah from goyim? When the money is going to remain by Jews. But by pidyon shvuyim, by definition, the money is going to be going to goyim, so therefore there's nothing wrong from accepting it from a goyish queen. Okay, there's different other answers when we get to the part in a few days, Bez Hashem, a week or a week and a half or so, when we get to that part about if for whom is it tzedakah, then we'll talk about it more there, Bez Hashem. Okay. So, Omale Rava the Rava Bamori. So Rava asked Rava Bamori, as we've had before. Rava Bamori was a great expert in Tanakh, and whenever they needed a source in Tanakh for a teaching of the Chachamim, then they would regularly ask him. So Rava asked Rava Bamori, Menaha Milsa de Omer Rabbanon, where is there a source in Tanakh for this that the Chachamim say, Mitzvah Rava Pidyon Shvuyim, that Pidyon Shvuyim is considered a great mitzvah? Omalei, so Rava Bamori answers him, Dichtiv, you have a posik in Yirmiyah. The Navi is warning the Jewish people, if you don't do tshuva, then you're going to face disaster. The Hashem says to them, Shalach me'al ponai v'yetzeu, send them away from my presence, and they will go. And the posik says, V'hoyo ki yomer alacha onu neitzei, so they're going to ask you, the Navi, what do you mean, where are we going out to? V'amarta aleihem, then you should tell them, Koyaman Hashem, this is what Hashem says, Asher lamoves lamoves, those who are destined to die will die, V'asher lacherev lacherev, those who are destined to be killed by the sword will be killed by the sword, V'asher larov larov, the ones by hunger will die of hunger, V'asher lashvi lashvi, and the ones who are destined to be taken captive will be taken captive. In other words, the Navi is telling them that different people are going to experience different things depending on what the Eibishter decided that each of them deserves. Some of them will die natural deaths, some of them by the sword, etc. But Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan points out, the later something is mentioned in this pasuk, the worse it is than the previous one. And since Shevi is last, then that means that's the worst of all, and therefore saving a yid from that is considered the greatest mitzvah. Let's work that out. Cherev koshem imavas, to be killed by the sword, is worse than dying a natural death. Iboisem a svara, iboisem a kara. We can use a svara to say that, or we could have a posit for it. So, Iboisem a svara, you could say a very simple svara. Haikom a navel, vahaikom a navel. A person who is killed by the sword, the body becomes repulsive and disgusting. It becomes dirty with blood. A person who dies naturally, you don't have that. So therefore, so to be killed by the sword is worse. It's a simple svara. Iboisem a kra, or you have a pasuk. Yoko ba'ini Hashem amov salach chasidim. Precious in the eyes of Hashem is the death of his chasidim. So we see, in other words, when they die naturally, when they die a natural death as a chassid would, then it's yoker, it's precious in Hashem's eyes that it's better that way rather than they're killed by the sword or whatever. So there. Rav koshem echerev, that hunger to die of hunger is worse than the sword. Again, iboisem a svara viboisem a kra. Again, you have a svara and you have a pasuk that backs that up. Iboisem a svara, hai komitzar, hai lo komitzar. A person who dies of hunger suffers for a while before that. It takes time for a person to die of hunger. The sword is a more immediate death. the boisem akra, or we have a pasuk, as the pasuk says in Eicha, toivim hoyu chalalei cherev mechalalei ra'av. Those who were killed by the sword were better off than those who died of hunger, whereas the pasuk says, goes on to say, shem yazuhu medukarim, they're pining away, and their life is ebbing away, so therefore, so we see that and Novi himself is saying that the ones who were killed by the sword were better off. Shvi, kosher mikulam, then to be taken captive by goyim is worst of all. The kulu isnu bay, all of them are possible. So he's in the hands of the goy. The goy can do whatever he wants to him. He can cause him to die. He can kill him with a sword. He can starve him. Here we have, Baruch Hashem, we have now all the ones in Eretz Yisrael who went through that for 2 years are finally out, Baruch Hashem. But yeah, they were exactly, some of them were, they were exposed to all those dangers and more during that period. Maharsha points out, okay, when we say to die naturally, obviously they don't have the power to do that. But sometimes you have. For example, a person is not in his native land, and therefore the climate is bad for him or whatever, and therefore he dies of that. That can still be considered that that he died because of being in captivity. So therefore we see that all of those things are included. Another point is the person himself, he never knows. Any moment they could take out a sword against him. Any moment they could deprive him of food, etc. So it's like he himself, psychologically, he never knows what's going to be from day to day, and therefore that also makes it worse in a way. So the Rambam summarizes when the Rambam is bringing in Hilchos Tzedakah that, yeah, a person who's in captivity is exposed to all these kinds of dangers, and therefore Pidyon Shvuyim is the greatest mitzvah of all. Therefore, when Ifra Hurmiz sent a message that she wants her purse of gold coins to be used for a mitzvah Rambam, then Abaya is explaining that that necessarily means Pidyon Shvuyim. Okay, so the Gemara goes on then to talk about some general dinim of Tzedakah. The tzedakah fund, the regular tzedakah fund that they use to it can be used to provide food for aniyim, or clothing, or housing, or whatever they need. Nigbis b'shnayim, that's collected by two gaboy tzedakah together collected. By the way, Ibn Yaakov actually points out a point in this regard. Tosfos brings in this connection that you have. We know that a Sefer Torah, you're normally not allowed to sell a Sefer Torah, with certain exceptions where a person needs the money to go learn Torah or to get married. What about Pidyon Shvuyim? Tosfos says Milsa de Pshiti. It's a poshita thing that yes, you sell even a Sefer Torah for Pidyon Shvuyim. In fact, earlier in the Masechta, actually, the Gemara also mentions that, for example, even let's say you have the building materials available for a shul, if a matter of Pidyon Shvuyim comes up, you sell those building materials and you use it for Pidyon Shvuyim. He brings also from Shulchan Aruch that when you have the Gaboy Tzedakah, have money for Tzedakah available, the greatest Tzedakah with it would be to help marry off girls who are poor. That's also, isn't Pidyon Shvuyim greater, but you have, it's more often that you have poor girls who need to be married off. But yes, in that sense, Pidyon Shvuyim would be even greater than that when it comes up.
Be greater than?
Greater even than marrying off a poor Yisrael and marrying off poor girls. As much as Hachnasas Kala is a great mitzvah, he was saying Pidyon Shvuyim is even greater than that. And historically, all the time, Jewish communities have always lived up to that and tackled, put in everything they could for Pidyon Shvuyim. Interesting, worth mentioning in this connection, actually, you have something about it in Nehemiah. And Sefer Nehemiah, he tells how at one point there was a problem. There were a lot of poor Jews. Many of them had borrowed money to pay taxes or to feed their families or whatever. And now they're really stuck. They're on the verge of going bankrupt. So what do they do? So Nehemiah describes how he got together a whole crowd and talked to the rich people who had lent them the money and who were demanding payment. He says, I want you to, there's one thing among other things he tells them, I want you to realize something. What's going to happen if these Jews end up, because they're so poor, they're going to have to sell themselves to the goyim as slaves? then we're all going to have to contribute to paying the Shvoyim. So you're anyway going to have to spend money on them. You might as well spend the money now on forgiving their debts rather than that they have to go through all of that. And they agreed that they agreed. He had a valid point, and they forgave the debt.
He told the Goyim that.
He told the Jews. No, he told the Jewish rich people who had previously lent the poor Jews money. He said, listen, if these Jews end up getting having to sell themselves as slaves to the Goyim, then you, all of us, are going to have to contribute to paying the Shvoyim. So why should they have to go through that? You might as well forgive them their debts in the first place.
They did.
Yeah, and they did. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so yeah. Okay, so Tanan Rabbanan, Kupar Shel Tzedakah Nigvas B'Shnayim, the Tzedakah fund has to be collected by two people together, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain in a second, Umas Chalekas B'Shloisha. And when it comes to dividing it up, to giving out for the amounts to the poor people, that you need three people. Nigvas B'Shnayim, the reason is Shein Osin Tzroras Salatsib or Pachas B'Shnayim. Whenever you have a position of authority, of financial authority over the community, there have to be at least two. Later on, the Gemara mentions a point of Chashad, but the Gemara is going to explain soon. We have a pasuk for it. So this is a Sroda Salat Tzibur. It's a position of financial responsibility on the Tzibur, and therefore there have to be at least two. Or Mishalekas B'Shloisha, the reason it has to be divided among using three people at least should give Dinei Mominus, because it's considered like Dinei Mominus. Giving out tzedakah means you have to assess each poor person. What does he need? How much does he need? So therefore, it's like Dinei Mominus. So therefore, you need a base set of three to do that. Now, so that's as far as the Kupar Shel Tzedakah, which is the general tzedakah fund. Then you have tamchoi. Then you have something called tamchoi. A tamchoi literally means a serving tray. So you have like these serving trays or candy dishes nowadays or whatever you have that have different sections. So like you have different sections for different foods. So that would be, the tamchoi was they would send people around to people's houses to collect actual food, and then they would give that food to their aniyim. So nowadays an equivalent would be like a soup kitchen or something. What? Tomchei Shabbos, that's something else. There, the word Tomchei means supporters of. Tomchei Shabbos means those who support Shabbos, that people should be able to make Shabbos. This word Tamchoi over here, Tof Mem Ches, that's with a Chof, this is with a Ches. Tamchoi with a Ches means a serving tray that has different compartments in it for different kinds of food. Again, you know, think of like you have by some simchas. Think of you have those trays where you have, you know, white fish in one and cream cheese in another and lox in another and so forth. That kind of thing is called a tamchoi.
What does tamchoi stand for?
That's what it means. That's what it means. A tamchoi is that kind of serving dish. The point is, it's that kind of serving dish.
A serving dish.
So the point is, back then, they would have, they would go around from one house to another, and each person would contribute a little of the food that they had made for that day. And then they'd use that food, they'd put it together, and use that to feed the aniyim. The Rambam explains in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, he says, a tzedakah pushka, general tzedakah fund, every single Jewish community has that. A tamchoi, some places they have it, some places they don't. Anyway, so tamchoi nigvas b'shloisha, that has to be collected by three people together, or mischalekas b'shloisha, and it's also divided up using three people. The reason is shigibuya v'chaluka shavim, because there, the collection and the giving out happens one after the other. You don't keep the food for very long, it'll spoil. So therefore, say, what are you going to have? You're going to have two people collect it, and then every time when it comes time to give out, you're going to have to go to the tircha of finding a third person to join you. You don't, so therefore, to begin with, have three people be going around to collect for it. Another difference, tamchoi b'chol yoyim, the tamchoi is collected and given out every single day. Because again, it's ready-to-eat food that they just give as is to the aniyim. Kupa, me'erev Shabbos, the erev Shabbos, the collection for the kupa, they do every erev Shabbos. Because it's money, and therefore, so some money they can keep for a meshach man. This way they can give the aniyim, money before Shabbos to buy food for Shabbos. Another difference, tamchoi la'aniyei olam. The tamchoi is for aniyim from all over. Even people who come from out of town and happen to be now in town, they're entitled to collect from the tamchoi. Because again, the tamchoi is ready to eat food. So you're talking people who probably don't have the money for a meal right now, so they can eat from the tamchoi. Kupa la'aniyei here, the kupa is specifically reserved for the aniyim of that city. Now the people of the city are into the gaboi tzedakah or the vada kol are entitled to exchange and make the kupa into a tamchoi and vice versa. In other words, they're all given to the aniyim so they can decide that funds that were collected from the kupa should be redirected to the tamchoi, or food that was collected for the tamchoi should be sold and the money redirected to the general tzedakah fund. They're allowed to change it to anything they want. Does it literally mean anything they want, as in other things that are needed for the city, or is it dafka other things for the aniyim? So you can have, let's say, for example, they've been collecting money. Let's say for clothes for the aniyim, they can decide, you know what, we have an emergency situation. We have aniyim that need shoes, and therefore we're going to redirect it from clothes to shoes. But lav dafka would mean, let's say, to redirect it to, let's say, the city defenses or the electric bill or something. So yesh oimim that not, and yesh oimim that they could, to that extent, even change it. They'd have a little more leeway than that. So my focus is showing. So they're able to do that. But ashrayin bnei ir lahaskas al amidus. Furthermore, the people of the city, or the shiva tuvei ir, the vada kol that represents them, are entitled lahasnes al amidus. They can make conditions about the measures. They can decide, for example, that the local saw or other measures should be bigger or smaller than they were. And about prices, they can decide that the price should be that a ceiling, that there should be, nobody should charge more than such and such amount, price controls. They're entitled to do that. They can also decide there should be a cap on wages for workers, all of that. In other words, the idea is to prevent inflation. And they are entitled to fine people who violate what they're saying. Rashi explains, lasia means lasia midas din Torah, to move them away from the technical din of the Torah. There's no specific din in the Torah, for example, that if people decide to use one type of, to let's say, for example, charge a certain price rather than a certain other one, that they're entitled to fine them. That's not something from Din Torah, but nevertheless, the people of the city or their representatives are entitled to do just that, to go beyond what the Torah says and to fine or otherwise penalize people who violate their city regulations. So that's the thing. So it's a part of, right. So when we're saying about prices, the idea is exactly they want to prevent people from price gouging. But not so much price gouging. The point is they don't want, I mean, anyway, if a person charges more than a certain amount, it's called a na, and you have dinim about that anyway. But no, what we're talking about, you might have, let's say, for example, that all the storekeepers in town would decide that we're going to raise our prices together. So the Bnei Ha'ir would prevent that from happening and tell them you can only sell at a maximum such and such a price in order to prevent inflation. So let's go through this. Omar, so we said in the Braisa, Ein Oisin Sroda Salatsiba Pochas Mishnayim, we can never have less than two people who have a financial responsibility over the Tzibur. So Menahanimili, where do we know that from? Omar Rav Nachman, and therefore we said that the Tzedakah fund has to be collected by at least two people. So Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Kro, because the Pasuk says, Vehem Yikros Azav, they should take the gold and the silver and whatnot from the Tchelas and whatever, from the Jewish people to make the Big Dikahona. So the point is, why they? It means, in other words, that the Pashtus of the Tzalal is overseeing the whole thing, but you need at least two people who are going to be taking the gold to make the big Likona, because this is a Sroras Salat Tzibur. They have authority over the Tzibur to collect from them this gold, and therefore there have to be at least two of them. So the Gemara points out, Sroras Udalai Abdi. Now, when it comes to a position of financial authority like that, then we're saying you can't have less than two Hahemuni Mehem. The implication is that a yochid by himself would be trustworthy to be a collector of tzedakah. Just that as a practical matter, you have to have sroros, and therefore you have to have two. So what does that mean? Messiah le'lel Rav Chanina. That supports what Rav Chanina says. Amar Rav Chanina, Maisu mina Rebbe shnei achen ala kopa. One time, Rebbe appointed two brothers to be the administrators of the kopa. Now, if it was a matter of that you can't, that they're not trustworthy, then you couldn't do that. The same way as you can't have two Edim or two Dayanim who are brothers. But since it's not a matter of trust, it's just a matter of the technicality of Soros, so therefore two brothers are good enough as long as they're trustworthy as in fact they were. My Srorusa, the question is, what's the Srorus? Okay, they're collecting money from the Tzibur, but Srorus suggests they have a position of authority over them, like they can force them to do that. What exactly are they forcing? And the answer is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avuah, Lefi Shema Mashkin in Malach Tzedakah, Va'afilu Be'erev Shabbos. The Gaboi Tzedakah can take a Mashkin from a person for Tzedakah even on Erev Shabbos. So Erev Shabbos, everybody's busy, everybody's rushing around for Shabbos. A person might say, I don't have the time right now to go and get out my wallet and go give you money for the kupa. So they can force him, they can demand from him a mashkin, then fine, give us a mashkin on the spot, and after Shabbos you'll give us the money. So therefore that means they have a position of authority over the people to force them to give tzedakah.
They'll get back your mashkin.
Yeah, when you get back the mashkin, when you give the tzedakah, you'll get back your mashkin, yeah. So the question is, Aini, is that so? The gaboi tzedakah have the right to do that? V'hoksib, a posuk says, Ufakadti al kol loichatzav. Hashem says, I will remember and I will bring punishment on all of his oppressors. So in context, it means the goyim who oppressed Jews throughout history. But the Gemara explains, v'omrav yitzchak v'shmol b'amarcha m'shmein rav, afilu al gaboi tzedakah. Means even gaboi tzedakah, who are oppressing people and making them give tzedakah inappropriately, then they get punished for it by Hashem. So we see they're not supposed to be forcing the people and taking mashkonis from them. The answer is, loikasha, hodor omid, hodor omid. It depends if the person is rich. Well, if he's not rich, if he's rich, then yes, they can force him. They know that he can give a certain amount of tzedakah, therefore they can force him. And if he tries to evade it and say, I'm too busy or whatever, then they can force him by taking a mashkin from him. That's the kind of thing they have the right to do. But if they know the guy is poor and they're still pressuring him to give tzedakah anyway, then we're saying the Eidushta will punish them for that because they're causing the person embarrassment. The word omid means the word omid. Rashi translates as osher, and there's a footnote over here where Rashi explains that word omid is related to the word oimed, which means an estimate. A rich person, people estimate how much he's worth. You know, like people talk about how much is Pliny and Pliny worth. As opposed to by a poor person, nobody does. And I once read actually that when the Friedrich Rebbe first came to America, he found that expression very off-putting. What do you mean, how much is he worth? A yid is worth an infinite amount, but that's the way they say it in American English. But anyway, so an omid then is somebody where people estimate his net worth, as opposed to a poor person. Nobody does that. So therefore, omid came to mean a rich person. Iyun Yaakov points out, you know, why not use the actual word osher? It's because, after all, sometimes you have, as the Pasuk phrase, that yesh mis asher ve'ein koil, you have a person who pretends to be rich, but he really has nothing, misroshesh, a person who pretends to be poor, v'hoin rov, and really has a great fortune. So you can't actually say osher or oni, but you can have, in other words, omid, that he looks rich, and therefore, if the gaboi tzedakah force him to give tzedakah, even though they may not know that really he's poor, they're not going to be punished for it because they're going according to what they're aware of, according to the usual estimate of his net worth. And the Gemara says, Kiha the Rava Akfe the Rav Nosson Ba'ami, as we have an example where Rava one time pressured Rav Nosson Ba'ami, who was rich enough to be giving lots of tzedakah, the Shokamine Abra Meir Zuzi with tzedakah, and he forced him to give 400 zuz for tzedakah. Which is quite a large amount. The Gemara mentions in some places 200 zuz is the minimum that a person has to have to not be considered poor. It was considered to be the amount that a person could live on for a year. So 400 zuz is quite a lot of money. First of all, Tosfos points out it wasn't Rava by himself. Again, we said there have to be at least two Gaboi Tzedakah, so it must be there was somebody else with Rava, but the Gemara didn't bother mentioning him because relative to Rava, he's not very important. The Gemara does that in a few places where we know there are a certain number of people, a certain minimum number of people needed for something, and the Gemara doesn't mention them because it's not the cover dick for the Talmud Chacham. But Tosfos brings up another point as well. The Gemara tells us in Cholin, anytime you have a mitzvah saseh, where it says explicitly in the Torah, a schar, in connection with the mitzvah, then Beis Din does not force a person to do it. The Gemara gives there an example of Kibud Av Ve'ein. There was a fellow who was brought to Beis Din, was brought to the Beis Din of Rabbi Yehuda, and they were going to give him Malkus because he wasn't honoring his parents the way he's supposed to, and a Talmud Chacham who was visiting in town, and Romi Bar Tamri told them don't. This is an example of a mitzvah that Matan Schar B'Tzidah. It says right there in the Torah, L'man Yarichun Yamecha. So therefore, so you don't punish him for it. He's basically saying, I don't want the schar, so I'm not going to do the mitzvah. Beis Din is not going to force him otherwise. So here, when it comes to tzedakah, the pasuk says, Pasayach tifkach asyantcha, and yivarecha Hashem alekecha. So how is Rava forcing Rav Nosson Ba'ami to give tzedakah? So Tosfos gives an answer, first of all, that it doesn't mean he forced him like with pech or something. It means he forced him as in like he compelled him verbally. Another answer is, to begin with, people accepted that they will accept that the Gaboi Tzedakah will force them when necessary, and therefore now Rava can actually do that in practice. Another answer in Tosfos is there's a loisase involved as well, and also it may mean that Beis Din could always force a person to do even such a mitzvah saseh. But if they do, it means they won't be punished for doing wrong to the person. So in other words, they could punish him if they want to. There's nothing wrong with it. They're just not required to. Another interesting answer I think Ben Yehoyada gives is that the Rambam writes that if a person gives tzedakah with a sour face, then he loses his whole schus. You have to give tzedakah, as the Gemara is going to say later on, you have to give with a smile and encouraging the poor person. Well, very well then, Rav Nosson Ba'ami wasn't willing to give the tzedakah, therefore he's not going to get set a schar for it. Therefore, it's back to, it's not a mitzvah to say that has schor abitzida. And therefore, Rava can very well force him actually bodily to give tzedakah. Interesting chat, yeah. So we'll continue tomorrow about the Milo of Gaboy tzedakah and continue with the dinim of, with the dinim of collecting and distributing tzedakah, Be'ez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ula, of Gimel Tevis. The Alter Rebbe in Torah Ur points out at the end of Parashas Vayigash, he says that he's talking over there about Yehuda versus Yosef, and Yosef represents Torah, and Yehuda represents Tefillah, and he goes and he talks about all that, and he talks about the whole matter of Mashpia and Makabel, and the Alter Rebbe explains there that when it comes to Shemini Esrei, we daven it silently, we daven it in a whisper. That's because nowadays the Nukva, the feminine, is Makabel, not Mashpia. Therefore, it's explained also by a Chasana, for example. We have the Chasin says Harayat Mekudeshes, the Kala doesn't respond with him. Because the Kala, so the Nukva, the Makabel, so to speak, nowadays doesn't have a voice. But La Asid Lavi, when the Makabel will be raised up to the level of Mashpia, then the Alter Rebbe said Shemini Esrei will in fact be Bekil Ram, and then we will have Kil Kala. That's what we say in the Sheva Brachas, Kil Chosin, Kil Simcha, Kil Chosin, Kil Kala. That Kil Kala will be nowadays. We only have the Kil Chosin. La Asid Lavi will have the Kil Kala as well. So now, The Rebbe asks in a sticha, wait a minute, the Zohar explains about the advantage of tefillah balachash. That is the very definition of what tefillah is about, because tefillah is tefillah, Shemini Esrei particularly, is bitul b'metzios, and Shemini Esrei represents olam atzilos, and therefore we say it silently, because at that point we're in a state of total bitul, and therefore we can't use our voice. So how is it possible then that la'asid lavei, that same tefillah which represents atzilos and represents bitul, is going to be b'kol rom, which seems to be the opposite of bitul? So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, on Chav Dalet Teves, which is Alter Rebbe's Yortzeit, and continue and explain with the Rebbe's explanation on the subject. Continuing with halachas of the Tilos Vidayim, if a person was awake all night, then he has to wash his hands as soon as day breaks. Even if all night he was not Masiach Das and he's guarding his hands, so let's say, for example, he was wearing gloves, nevertheless, he still has to wash with a keli without a bracha when daybreak comes. Because it's possible that when the Chachamim made the Tekanim, the Tilos Yadayim, and the reason was, we said there were two basic reasons for the Tilos Yadayim. One, because of the Ruach Ra. Fine, so that won't apply over here so we said a few reasons, actually. One is because of Ruach Ra, that when he sleeps, fine, here he didn't sleep. Another one is that he might have touched unclean areas of his body, fine, he was wearing gloves. But you also have the third consideration, the one that the Alter Rebbe had brought first in the Siman, that you have to wash your hands the same way as the Kohenim wash their hands and feet for the Avodah, and that wouldn't be a distinction whether he slept and became a Beriah Chadasha versus not slept at all, and therefore he should have to wash Negovaster, either way, so he would wash. So the Alter Rebbe says he would wash without a bracha. However, though, there's a letter there's a letter the Rebbe wrote that he says that I heard in private from my shver, from the Friedrich Rebbe, that in that case you actually do say the bracha. And if it's brought in Loch Kol Chabad and Lamaisa, for example, when people stay up on Shavuos night, whatever they do, they wash and they take to say the bracha on the Tilos Yadayim and the rest of the morning brachas.